Welcome, everyone, to this special membership call for the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School for all members. And today, I am here with Mary Kern, president of SAMS, and a practicing shamanic astrologer, as well as myself, Eric Roth, here as the managing director, as well as a shamanic astrologer. And we're both here, have our own practices, and make major contributions to the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. And we are happy to do this now third call and host this third call, a special membership call for the school, and continuing to help and build the community around the school. So we're excited. Today's topic is going to be about Saturn, and we're going to dive into the various parts of Saturn, its history, where it came from, and how it shows up in our charts, what it represents, and certainly in this current age in which we're living in and being so prominently featured in here in 2020. In fact, the day that we're doing this here on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, Saturn is still within two-thirds of a degree from Pluto in the sign of Capricorn. So even though, there's a lot, typically in the astrological community, there's almost an overabundance of focus on the exact conjunctions, but not enough on the window of time that planets stay, sort of in a certain orb, 1 or 2 degrees, for example. But in this case, certainly the entire year of Saturn and Pluto, and then we'll be joined by Jupiter not too long from now. So, Mary, do you want to begin, start off with some insights and what Saturn is and where it came from?
Well, I'll give some, just to ground us into a little information about Saturn. It's the sixth planet from the Sun after Jupiter, and it's the second largest in the solar system after Jupiter. And I don't know if we always think about it, but it's a giant gas planet, and its radius is about 9 times the size of the Earth. And we all know about the rings around it, but I don't know if everybody knows that we've got at least 62 moons, with the largest one called Titan being larger than Mercury. That's kind of impressive. It is the least dense of all the planets because it is gassy. It's actually less dense than water, which is interesting because we know that it just it reflects the dense structure and form of matter, cultural structures, boundaries, bones, teeth of the human anatomy, as well as the rules and the boundaries of being in a body and the boundaries of time that structure our life. So I think that all brought together is kind of fun. We know that those rings that frame the planet are a result of superfast winds in the upper atmosphere, and those winds are carrying billions of tiny ice and rock particles that they think were probably shattered asteroids or moons or even dwarf planets. And it also revolves super fast. Its days are only 10 and a half hours long. So it does serve physically as a little bit of a guard to the Earth because it has such a massive gravitational pull that it can help steer asteroids away from the Earth. And we've been really focused on studying this planet in the astronomy world big time in 1979 with the Pioneer 11 and then again with the Voyager. And more recently, the Cassini orbited Saturn for 10 years and collected data about all these moons. It marks our visible boundaries of all the planets that we can see with the naked eye. So the outer limits of our perception or what we see with our sight from middle world reality from Earth is Saturn. And interesting, I think if you look deeper at this physical realm stuff, that we can view matter as a compressed form of spirit that holds the blueprint of the body, mind, and purpose for which we each incarnated. And so if you think about humans, sentient beings, particularly humans, as God experiencing herself through these visual analyzers, analyzers that we call senses, at this level, this pearl of great price is really not material at all, material in its way, but it's really helping us to find a middle ground between the opposites of duality in order to, you know, to return to this oneness. So it's in her infinite wisdom, I would say Saturn provides us necessary tools to discover more who we are at the soul level and to take that up a notch when we go through our Saturn cycle. We say that it's the operating manual for this level of density where we operate, and it tells us how to survive and how to run our bodies. And we'll get into more about how that operating manual has shifted over time a little bit later on in the program. I'd love to hear more about this.
Thank you. That was great information. And yeah, Saturn has been originally when it was spotted with the one of the first telescopes in, I believe this is the late 1500s, early 1600s by Galileo. And, you know, Daniel makes a famous comment or quote from Galileo and citing this planet that what represented the, you know, the old, what they called old man Saturn, and the rings looked like it had a, you know, the figure had a beard. And of course, they couldn't focus in on that it actually, what those rings were. They couldn't even distinguish what the rings were, but now we know. And it fits quite elegantly into the astrological definition of Saturn and what it represents within ourselves and how humanity has been guided by Saturn throughout the ages. Mm-hmm. Saturn, from a mythological standpoint, from a, you know, where this came from and you know, how the ancients viewed it, well over four, if not over 6,000 years ago, during what was it called? There was a particular focus on what Saturn represented, but there were many names that really showed up for Saturn. And you can look at just about any culture throughout the world in ancient times, and there was some figure that had, you know, represented that particular point of light in the sky, and that connected us to rules and regulations, to civilization, to, you know, creating order in the world. In ancient Sumer, it was Enki and Ea, E-A. In the Mesoamerican, ancient Mesoamerica, there was Viracocha, there was Kon-Tiki, and several other names. In Egypt, the god Ptah, P-T-A-H, which was a god that was worshipped by Imhotep, is credited with the sort of the design or the architecture of the pyramids, though that's, you know, there's certain, in certain circles that those pyramids could have been built even long before, 5,000 years ago. And in China, one of the figures that is associated with Saturn is called the Yellow Emperor. But if you look across the globe, you'll find that probably there are many figures that represent this, and there's a wonderful book called Hamlet's Mill that goes into, talks about world ages, but how important the Saturnian figure showed up in the world throughout the ages. And this is, you know, going back farther than 6,000 years. Now, in that book, you know, as we talked about in the school, the yugas, there is, during the time where Saturn is reported to have walked the earth with humanity, it represented the fallen ruler of the Golden Age. And that Golden Age was Kreta Yuga. And was this figure, the Saturnian figure, was held to rule a city called Eridu, which is connected to the Eridanus River, as well as the celestial companion to that, and the star the star Canopus, which in ancient Grecian Roman times, that Saturnian figure was exiled, was overthrown and exiled to that celestial abode. But we're here now, having many millennia since then, and the corruption that Saturn has been taken from what it originally stood for. So, and of course, in today's world, you know, especially when we were, if you look back into, the medieval and the Renaissance period, and how they interpreted Saturn, had a much greater judgment against Saturn, as if it was something bad or malefic, that it was the one that was going to judge you no matter what you did, and dished out harsh punishments to everyone around them. But really, Saturn, in my view, when we look at it on a broader brush scale, we can see that Saturn represents, as Mary mentioned, the operating manual. So the gift of order, the gift of civilization to balance the chaos, to balance the need to change, also the need for strong foundations, the need for rules and laws and education for growth in the long term over many generations, not necessarily to be fixed on one particular teaching and that's the only teaching that is going to last for many thousands of years, but something that can be flexible, something that can grow, something that can connect with our and embrace who we are as human beings in the long term. So this perspective, Saturn, is something that Daniel Giammario, the founder of shamanic astrology, brought forth, this new perspective on Saturn, the unchained version, the liberation of Saturn, is something that he brought forth into this paradigm, the shamanic astrology paradigm. So it's to follow that same course, to not have judgment, and realize also the gifts of what Saturn brings into our lives. And that's something, Mary, you and I are going to discuss as well, about what Saturn represents and how we can utilize it in our life. I've talked to other astrologers. In fact, I did just a couple of trades recently with other astrologers, and I even, even researching other people and their view of Saturn. There is a view that Saturn brings up, like one of their qualities is fear. And while Pluto doesn't necessarily have a governance or a ruler over just that particular primal reaction in people, fear is I think something that really can be more broad in a natal chart. Because we could have certain like ego level fears that can show up when Saturn is essentially guiding us toward a direction where our soul is going, and so we can have a certain fear that can show up. And Mary, you talk sometimes about false fears, and I think that's maybe where some of the shadow of Saturn might come into play around this. But so looking at Saturn from a different perspective, I've done talks in California and Oregon about Saturn at various fairs that I've done, and this is something I try to enforce about that Saturn is not neither good nor bad, but is something that is absolutely needed in our lives and to help with the growth of structure and our connection to providing for ourselves and bringing in a sense of order and linearity, being able to participate in this what we call middle world. And Mary, do you want to discuss or you want to take on the topic of the middle world?
You're so bad. Well, first, I just want to, I really appreciate you giving us an overview of that. And I've always thought of Saturn, because my background is just shamanic astrology, I have eyes. I've seen it is good. I felt its effect on my life from the get-go. I've always found it interesting how Kaylin's spoken about it in relation to Kronos and how the Greeks saw Kronos as the king of the Titans and the god of time. So I really really connect Saturn to this whole thing about time. And again, how, you know, we often talk about there is no time, and yet we're all ruled by time. The story you told about him having ruled the cosmos during the Golden Age, I know Kronos was said by the Greeks was said to have done that, and they had a relationship with him and Uranus because they said that he his father was Uranus and that he castrated him and put him in the sky as Uranus, and Saturn, yeah, he's had a bad rap, but way back from mythological times. But then try to imagine your body without bones in it. Try to imagine the chaos of culture without any rules, and you start to really perceive it a little bit differently. And, So you're talking about the middle world. When we look at all of the planets in shamanic astrology, we kind of categorize them by their influences or the influences that are being reflected by them, with the underworld being Pluto and Chiron, and that representing the deep waters of the human psyche and the soul and then the outer planets of Uranus and Neptune really representing the celestial realm, which I think of as grace. When you're gifted, not because you've worked hard and earned something, but it's just a different way of receiving guidance from this universe. And then the middle world realm is objective reality, and that includes Jupiter and Saturn. That's the hard facts of life, and that's what you have to know in order to, you know, to be able to sustain yourself and to tell the truth about your life and to discard what doesn't serve you and to be able to see what that is. And that's Saturn. And that's how I think of about it as being the real life issues, the nuts and bolts of it, the stuff we deal with every day just to stay on this planet. And have a purpose, and to go into new territory, and to break through beliefs that limit us. I mean, that's all of, you know, we can talk more about that with the gifts, but yeah, that's middle world reality.
Thank you, Mary. That was great. Yeah, that was wonderful. Saturn is one of the main, it's like the primary representative of the middle world here from our perspective here in shamanic astrology. I remember many occasions when I've given readings to people that I share what that somebody's about to go into a Saturn cycle, and there's a bit of a trepidation, a hesitation on their part about and maybe even a dislike that's happening in their lives, but really it can be a really powerful gift. I've often worked with Saturn in my own personal life, and have been, working in harmony my life with Saturn, and it does provide a certain level of liberation and rewards when we're moving into the space that is more our own truth and who we are and what we're all about in this world. So Saturn can help guide us, and sometimes it requires us to, this is something we're going to talk about, Mary, about shedding one's skin and, you know, what the snake goes through every certain interval of when it sheds its own skin. And in fact, something that relates to the cycles themselves, and that you know, about every 7+ years, we have one specific kind of, you know, Saturn cycle that happens to everyone, and that the human body recycles and/or goes through its renewal of all its cells in the body, including the bones. That takes roughly 7 years, or a little over 7 years, perhaps, to go through all of that. So when we think of that connection, that synchronicity, it's really powerful and really, it does generate a certain level of renewal within us if we choose to embrace it in our lives. So,
I like to think of the major returns as marking really life phases, but the squares and the oppositions as kind of intermediary steps that they're like seasons that you go through in each of the major phases of life. You know, you have your returns, but then you have your first squares, and you've got your oppositions at 180 degrees, and then you've got your second squares. And even at the very fundamental development of a human, at that first square is when you get your first Mercury return, and the circuits of the mind's complete. There's physical maturation of the structure with the solidity of bones and the last teeth come in. And then at that first square, you have puberty, and you've got hormones that come in, and you're able to reproduce. And then you get to that first return, and you've completed a first phase of life and begin another one and go through that all again. And they're all related. So they're not totally independent of one another.
No, and so for those of you that are new to astrology and new to shamanic astrology, when we talk about cycles, when we talk about a plant, what we're talking about is that when we're born, it captures the moment of where planets are located in the solar system from the perspective of being here on Earth. But, of course, everything is in motion. Nothing stands still, and so over years, these planets move around the sun, and from our perspective, they're moving across the sky and frequently across the sky more than once or twice, and especially with the inner planets, the outer planets take a bit longer, and so Saturn takes about 29 and a half years to transit all the way around the sun. And from our perspective, there's a famous cycle with Saturn, one of the most famous cycles of all astrology other than a Mercury retrograde, is Saturn return. And so when we get to 29 to 30, that is really powerful time of maturation that takes place in our lives. And so for those that are looking at like, well, what does that mean? So if you're born, Saturn is in a particular place, and then it over nearly three decades, it takes that long for Saturn to move across the chart, or really across the sky, back to its original position where it was when you were born. And that is what constitutes a Saturn return. Not necessarily when Saturn goes into the same, quote, sign, although some astrologers do measure that. And it's not to say that there's no effect, so to speak, when it does that. But it's when it gets within a degree, roughly a degree, of your natal Saturn position. And then that's when it triggers essentially a Saturn return. But, of course, there are exceptions to that rule because planets don't operate sometimes in a neat and tidy way. And so we have to, there are exceptions to how that particular cycle is measured when it comes to the, quote, orb, the amount of degrees that is required for it to be near for the cycle to start. But that's a subject that's focused primarily on the shamanic timeline and planetary complex online course, which is taught here at the school. But on a basic level, just to know that Saturn comes in and out of our lives about every 7 to 7.5 years, and we get to experience that. So as Mary talked about some of those frames, you know, and during those times, maturation, you know, when we look at the image of a snake shedding its skin, what is really happening, you know, on a fundamental level, there's something coming, there's a renewal happening within the body of the snake as it's growing. And so this shell, this outer shell is being removed, but we can become, just as the snake does, become attached to that shell, to something that it's familiar with, that it knows it in and out, and to see it suddenly and or in some cases gradually disappear, you know, can be very uncomfortable, can leave us very vulnerable. And certainly on an egoic level, we can become very attached to that. And it's as if we're, oh my God, we're dying. And that could be nothing further from the truth there. So, that reference that Daniel brings in that Kaylin also shares about too, you know, this is a really important reference and kind of gives us a nice visual image of what's taking place in a Saturnian process, an initiation from a shamanic astrology perspective. So we can choose to embrace it or we can choose to resist it. You know, that's where free will comes in. We have that capacity to realize who we are and finding, going deep into what our truth really is, what our soul's intent really is. And maybe not hold on to things that are toxic or have perhaps just completed their service with us. Sometimes it's relationships, sometimes it's jobs or certain educational timelines that we're on. Perhaps there's a new seed is being planted. This is certainly related to also the sign of Capricorn, which Mary, you and I spent a few minutes talking about the differences between signs and like their resonant planet. So Saturn is resonating, or it does resonate with the sign of Capricorn, just as Jupiter does with Sagittarius and Neptune does with Pisces. So Saturn and Capricorn, when we're looking at that, Saturn really is more of a I look at it as more of a broad brush, a more general theme-based kind of a thing over the longer term. In when it comes to a planet versus its resonant, this resonant sign might, especially in an individual person, is more personal. But then the planet comes in and provides another layer to help define how that a particular sign is going to express itself, and what obstacles, what benefits, what vulnerabilities, what where our intent is, and how it's there to support our life journey. So, of course, that goes into the other layers. You know, there's in a chart, there's the house position on a natal chart. There's also, you know, the any other aspects that might show up, whatever planets may be also present. But in this particular call, we're just, except for the questions that are going to come up at the end, maybe the last half an hour, we're going to explore all of that and give you a taste of what how interpreting Saturn on the personal chart, how that shows up here from a shamanic astrology perspective. Mary, any thoughts around that?
I have two thoughts. I think what you said is really, really good. I would point out that you talked about these cycles giving you the opportunity to tell your truth and discard what is no longer needed so that you can shed your skin. And I know it's interesting that if you said you have free will, if your free will is so strong that you choose not to do that, where you're at will be solidified or crystallized until you have another Saturn cycle and that opportunity comes to you again. So I think that's kind of fun to point out, because some of us, especially if we have a lot of Taurus and Earth, we really hang on to the present and we have a really hard time moving forward with this stuff. Yeah, I guess the other thing that's fun to think about is that our the shamanic astrology mystery school paradigm, you know, I'm sure everybody is familiar with the fact that we do teach the timeline of life, and the timeline itself is Saturn. That's what the timeline is. And the timelines, even including your synodic cycles and things, that is all Saturn-based because it's all the boundaries of time and how we experience all of this from our place on this planet. So, yeah, I think you really segued well into another real appropriate topic that helps us define the difference between Saturn and Capricorn and in talking about the essence and the content of both of these. And like all archetypes and even all deities, Saturn and Capricorn both hold an essence and a content. The essence is the universal, always present seed form of the archetype, and the content is how it presents itself in a specific culture at a specific time. And so you can see how one is universal, and that universal essence of Saturn is basically what we said earlier, the operating manual for spaceship Earth, the rules of engagement on this planet. And then when they shift through time, which we're really experiencing now, that is the content of Saturn. If we've been with this paradigm for very long at all, Daniel has made very popular and important the idea of the old patriarchal Saturn content. We've all experienced it, having been born on this planet during this time. And it is one of the things that's seen as negative about Saturn by some astrology schools. And it's really about the heavy consequences, the bondage, the being judged, the not being good enough. And this would never be the essence of Saturn, but it's the patriarchal content. And it's been around for quite a long time since the times of the Great Mother in the Neolithic times. This Saturn content was made even more restrictive, more morally and ethically judgmental, more suppressive for the feminine, and more about right and wrong action with the advent of the Abrahamic religions and even the Victorian era, which spawned my own parenting, was a more contracted and restricted time on the planet, probably than any other time for women. And my generation, the boomer generation, was really a counter-reaction to that. We were the ones that said, no, we want more freedom. And we kind of ushered in the very beginnings of this new age back in the 60s. So the new Saturn content is this new operating manual that we're all involved in our lifetime, where we're really asking the important questions of how do we sustain humanity at this time and how do we make it safe for the next seven generations? How do we nurture all souls and give them equal rights and equal nourishment? And how do we keep and make life sacred again for humanity and all sentient beings? How do we return to the garden? How do we collectively become aware of our own divinity with radiant self-love and getting rid of the judgment and allow us to be radiant and co-creative so that we can stand strong together and create a future that we can envision. So that's, to me, the new operating manual. That's the new content that we're really trying hard right now to create. And Sam's is, I think, real instrumental in getting people to understand that bigger picture of life and kind of what's necessary. So the essence of Saturn versus Capricorn, structure and form or energy manifest into matter, taking responsibility, those are qualities, I think, of both of these both Saturn and Capricorn, but more central to Capricorn, like you just were saying, are the more personal traits, identifying maybe the best means of getting a job done while we manage resources and the most practical utilization of them. And what Daniel calls asking the question, what grows corn, that is more Capricorn. So the essence of Capricornians include being those pillars of the community, the structure that holds it together, and idyllically, you know, in the future, making it safe for the next seven generations, specifically through human functions in government, lawmaking, managing, directing, building, and engineering a better world, a greener world, a more ecological world. So it's slowly changing from this patriarchal masculine control and domination to a conscious equal sharing and a compassionate guidance from a circle of elders. And it's just this evolution is located in the Capricorn seasonal sign where everything is, all these planets are located right now. And what you were saying to me earlier, but I found so fascinating, and I hadn't really given it a lot of thought, was how the seasonal sign of Capricorn has the backdrop of the archer in the sky, and how that's really helping to redesign maybe its search for truth. As it formulates this new operating manual for Earth, we have those two influences working together. You have anything to add to that? I don't know.
Yeah. Great stuff. Thank you for adding that to the call for sure. Go from there, it's also with Saturn and Saturn in Capricorn, there is a piece of this where it's also a responsibility and obligation for humanity to utilize. I mean, this is, you mentioned this, laws and rules, you know, right use or responsible use of these laws and rules in ways that benefit humanity. Not for, a specific, quote, personal gain or, to fatten the bottom line of, a particular thing, but for something that can actually, create a more long-term solution that is beneficial to the balance between humanity and the Divine Mother, Mother Earth, Gaia. And this could also include, technological developments, certainly with the knowledge that has been amassed, our knowledge of genetics, our knowledge of the medical world, the knowledge of technologies, space technologies, communication technologies, and even technologies involved in weapons. There's a certain a level of responsibility and obligation that we have to humanity and to Mother Earth with all of that, and that we have to weigh that. And certainly a great example of that was, right use and the responsibility and the lack thereof during the atomic age when the nuclear bomb was developed and nuclear power was developed. And certainly there was some major mistakes that were made and continued to be made for a few decades after that. So that's a great example of how Saturn and Capricorn particularly can show up and, help us have perspective and be, more, instead of making a rash decision or, from a place of brokenness or revenge or vulnerability, where we're wounded and we're lashing out in the wrong way, that we can get perspective and try to see the broader picture from a Saturnian place, this would be weighing all that you have, weighing the do's and the don'ts, the haves, what you want, what you don't want, and to take some time to let it sink in, to plan, to show up for yourself and the collective. You know, and in many cases, certain world leaders, countries failed to do that and wrought unconscionable disaster upon the world. So now we're at a place now where we can choose a different kind of a path that is more in harmony. And while there is a lot of like the negative news tends to get the headlines of all the challenges and the drama that's out there, there's also a lot of amazing developments of people taking their time and being responsible and showing up and caring for Earth, caring for humanity, and hoping that can, you know, win over more and more people in the process. So I try to look also for those stories, and there are a lot of them out there. And in fact, I think that's one of the great benefits of having this particular alignment that's going on in the world now with Saturn and Pluto, soon to be joined by Jupiter in the sign of Capricorn right now. And that it isn't just that a lot of our shadow is going to be exposed and, you know, that this is going to create additional levels of chaos. Sure, that is happening and will happen, but there's also this, think of it as like the revelation of the deep, dark soil that we can plant anything we want into it, and how amazing that revelation is showing up, that we now can be this seed point for the long term of humanity and its relationship to the cosmos, including Mother. So right. Maybe this is my own, in some ways I have a little bit of a rose-colored glasses on with my Sagittarius chart. I have five planets in Sagittarius, and so I sometimes can be drawn really, really strongly to seeing that viewpoint of what's beyond the horizon, being able to see the hope and see, have a certain sense of optimism around that, but not to ignore also the reality and that we have to make sure that we don't ignore, like, for example, you know, there are people, you know, a certain world leader in a certain country that ignores reality and is essentially like the caricature of the ostrich sticking its head in the sand when they want to fantasize about a particular world where nothing else is matters but their own fantasy. So that can be especially when given the reins of power, it can be mitigated disaster. Unmitigated disaster. So that's where checks and balances comes in. That's why governance is important, and the population gets to speak. That other bodies of wisdom are intended to come in and help balance that out, and to help grow and create a more balanced, really just, I say this because it's true, is that that's what it's there for. But I like, Mary, what you talked about with the Archer constellation. And so if we're looking in the sky to find Saturn, it's not visible right at this moment at the time of this call. So if you're listening to this just around in January 2020, Saturn isn't visible. It's on the other side of the sun right now. But it does become visible in at the very last day of this month and throughout all of this year, or the rest of this year. And you'll see that it's in the outer edge of the Archer constellation. And that constellation is that marks, near the tip of this Archer's arrow, where the galactic center is, as well as the Archer figure kind of having is pulling back an arrow. It's very clearly seen as a bow pulling back an arrow, and it creates tension. It creates a certain level of focus and aiming for somewhere, aiming for something, aiming for greater consciousness, maybe aiming for greater clarity and responsibility of where we're going into the long-term future. So I find it really interesting that Capricorn now as a sign, a seasonal sign, is overlaid by the Archer constellation. So this goes into territory. So for some people, not knowing, if you don't know, I had a question earlier today from a member of the school asking about the ecliptic and the movement of the sun and the constellations. And so to briefly say that signs are not constellations, and that the sun moves about roughly a degree, slightly less per day across the sky. But from our perspective, because the Earth is spinning, it's looking like it's crossing from horizon to horizon. But that's because the Earth is spinning, so the whole world is getting a view of the sun at that moment. And then that happens 365 times. And then over that point, as the Earth orbits the sun, the sun will be in different places throughout that year. So, but then there's different constellational backgrounds there. And then, of course, just what we just talked about, Saturn, which is located on what we call the plane of the solar system. So the, if you see online and then in books, that the planets are all kind of orbiting on the same, roughly the same level. And that's what we call the plane of the solar system, or the ecliptic. That's where eclipses, the name eclipses, come from, is that particular word. We can shift gears right here. Mary.
I want to add something to one thing you talked about how we are experiencing a bit of chaos right now. And it can be real, and it is confusing. And Daniel and Kaylin really gave a name to that at the ending of one age and the beginning of another. Because if you look at the yearly cycle, the same thing was always kind of observed back in the time of the Romans at the winter solstice. And they actually celebrated that prior to the new year with an event they called Saturnala. And when all the prevailing laws were turned upside down, and they did everything backwards, kind of. And that's really what we see in our government right now. We see that happening on a planetary scale. So it's really a planetary Saturnala that we're all experiencing as we go through, like you said, a time of intention, chaos and confusion. We know we have an accelerated time at the turning of an age, as our souls all agreed to be here in the third dimension, in this dimension, on this planet, in order to really work out any past karma, to kind of ascend to a higher level. We've kind of have to purify what we've got and where we've come from. So Daniel has really made us aware at this time in the collective humanity is experiencing this great Saturnala ending of a 26,000-year cycle. So you can kind of look out and listen to the evening news and kind of feel like, oh, well, this is kind of normal when you really consider the big picture. Give some context for it, and I enjoy that.
Yeah, so. Thank you. I was just reminded of a particular song that sometimes I hear in the 1980s during the Reagan administration. I think it was during the Reagan administration, but by Genesis, called "Land of Confusion," and it talks about. I mean, it definitely is relevant today, and talking about needing the need for more love in this world. And so that's, you can easily search out that song and find it on really just about any device that you might have hooked up to the internet, or if you happen to have that particular album. But that's just I think it's a great example. This great turning of the ages that we're in now is a cauldron for a new civilization to arise. And in order for something to move from one to another, there tends to be a lot of chaos that can occur as one force or one body is holding on to something that they are attached to that they don't realize is needing to complete itself, and that the other, all the innovation, all the ideas, and all of these amazing people are coming up in the world that are sharing these ideas of how we can live better and more in harmony with this planet and our, you know, our own path, our own journey, authentically speaking as well. Is to open up to that and not be fixed on a particular belief and to shut out everything else around you except for that one. That becomes obviously very dogmatic, and we've seen what dogmatism can do in the world if left unchecked for a long period of time. So thank you, Mary, for connecting the dots there.
Yeah. You want to talk more about the cycles themselves and what their intent is? I think we have both the transits and we've got the timeline stuff.
I think maybe we can do that with examples that have been given by two members of the school, and then open up for in person or over the phone examples from any others that are happen to be on the line today. So what do you think?
I think that's a good one. I think though, just in general, noting that they coincide with what Daniel calls the resume points of life is helpful in helping people remember that. They may be times where you change your partner, your career, your location, your lifestyle. And we talked about shedding skin and feeling itchy, like life isn't quite fitting right anymore. And just the need to go for it all the way and knock on all the doors and really get through with where you want to go and focus on it so that you really see what doesn't work and what does work. That's why we say that Saturn promotes growth. And it also helps us be free, because by releasing what no longer serves us of concepts, ideas, physical things in our life, we definitely find freedom in that. And being no longer, and even the hoax of Saturn, and being aware of the hoax of perfectionism, and not being good enough, and seeing where all that fits into our lives, so that we can, with that awareness, we can compost it and find more who we are in our essence and who we came here to be. So cool. Yeah, we had two nice questions. Why don't you introduce those, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So we'll ask her to come on the call here in just a moment. Sheridan is about commenting on her Saturn square Saturn that started recently, and along in combination with the ending period of her Chiron return and a Neptunian opposition to her natal moon, and having that question pertaining to having all three worlds happening at the same time, and as well as the it's kind of a second part question about how natally Sheridan's Saturn position is conjunct her north node and has a loose square aspecting 90 degree, roughly within 10 degrees of 90 of her natal Venus position. So she's wondering about what to occur, and this is something, Mary, you introduced early on. I shared about it as well, and then we're kind of coming back to it around what Saturn square is. And there's two different, essentially two, whether they have a lot more in common than they have differences, but there's two different Saturn squares that happen in a person's life. One is a kind of a first square, and the other one is a last square. So, Mary, what I'm going to share here is with Sheridan is that her coming up, and this is something you and we did the calculations for, that Sheridan experienced this same square when she was 21 and a half to 22 and a half during that time in her life in 1990. So she's coming up on the Saturn square that's beginning just after her Chiron return. And this is a big one. This is something that Daniel and Kaylin talk about a lot in the timeline course, as well as in other webinars and or classes since then. But this is that maturation point. This is a time where, when it comes to the midlife passage, this is the period where, she's reaching the ending stage, the ending phase of this midlife passage. Where I've always looked at it from a Jungian standpoint, that this period, up until about 52-ish, is that period where the midlife passage ends. And so it's a time that also a great preparation for the last years before a person's second Saturn return. So, preparing for the next 7 years and when it comes to resources, relationships, when it comes to what they're doing with their life, how they're showing up for themselves, taking responsibility for their path, and you're really putting time, money, and energy into what they're truly here to be and to do after the long amount of years that could have been with a lot of shaking up, changes, paths being twists and turns and different things showing up in the midlife passage. But now that, here Sheridan is nearing the end of her Chiron return, which is a completely different cycle in and of itself, but let's just say that it has to do with her or a person in general coming to the time where they fully digest their lives as it is up into that big marker, that age 50 to 50, 51 marker. So a full digestion of that and the wounds associated with that, and that where that can free a person when they're able to do work on themselves and integrate some personal medicine, that they can be more free to choose and have more strength to choose the path that they are, not just attracted to, but are drawn to, or it's drawn to them. So that's what I wanted to share about that. And they can get clues from the period that they were in at the age 21 to 22 when they first had what is called the last quarter square. So it's the Saturn squaring itself on a natal chart. So Saturn has gone through three quarters of its orbit, and is squaring its origin point when that person was born. And so for Sheridan, that last square took place throughout most of 1990. It was between March 31, 1990 to near the end of December or mid-December of 1990. Mary?
Yes. And so I would ask Sheridan what her life was like in 1990 from March 16th to December 29th, And what specifically she was completing, if it was a career, if she entered a marriage, if, I mean, if she wants to come on and tell us that, that's fine. But otherwise, absolutely doing that and knowing that this this Saturn square is bringing a new octave of that, bringing a different version of that, allowing her to upgrade whatever major decision or big change happened in her life at that time, which was also when she probably had a Uranus cycle happening at that time, but that's not happening now, of course. And then the Chiron return that's going up through March is, we know that Chiron is about knowing the self and developing the self and honoring the self and having a strong self. And so any wounding that Sheridan has experienced to that has been up for exploration and digestion and assimilation. And then the Neptune opposition to the Virgo moon, which is her lineage, with, I believe, a Gemini job, which you really have to think of that kind of as the priestess who's exploring all the deep patterning of the divine feminine. And in her exploration of that, having Neptune there has probably brought her a bigger vision of that. Maybe even her shamanic astrology is that bigger vision of the great patterning that she's always probably been drawn to. And then combining that with the Saturn cycle, that makes it more practical. It may be, you know, it may be a time to make a decision in her life about, or maybe she has recently made a decision in her life about how to make make more practical use of her knowledge of the patterning, maybe even joining a board of directors that's, you know, in a mystery school or something. That would be a Saturn kind of a decision that would support this Neptune opposing her Virgo moon. That would be one way of looking
at it. Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, just in 2019, and Sheridan, just so you're aware, Saturn squared your nodes, the north and south node, and that certainly pointed, you know, that was also, you know, the part of the decision point here in your life, a part of a crossroads in your life at this time, as it's, you have a lot of activity in where Saturn is located in your chart. In fact, where Chiron is, you know, Saturn, your natal Saturn position is in the same sign, in the same house there with as Chiron is moving through that area of your chart. So there's definitely powerful activation here and decision point, a major crossroads, and you know, I think the contributions of Neptune as well as Saturn have helped you gain, you know, especially in Saturn's case, clarity in what is happening in your life. But you are ending the Neptune cycle as well, and Chiron return, but you're going to get more doses of Chiron in the future, in a couple of years when Chiron moves into alignment with your North Node, and that could be another clue for you around your future, around you know, the medicine you need to bring in for yourself to help you move into that future. So I'm gonna bring her on. Hopefully she'll be available here. She's on the call, so I'll unmute her.
Mm-hmm. And you're saying, hi there, yeah. Sheridan. Are we giving you any deeper insights?
Yeah, thank you. That's so helpful. You know, I've definitely been feeling a lot into it and, you know, and just the three of them all happening together, even though, you know, some are waning and others are waxing, obviously, but but yeah, you know, it's interesting. It definitely gives me more insight into you know, just what it all means and bringing it together. And I was thinking earlier today, just what you guys brought up about the, you know, revisiting the like 21 to 22 age time and seeing the similar themes coming up, and you know, and one of the things that I've really noticed is, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a separate topic, but like how much that Neptune opposition I feel like has really served my Chiron return, because having my moon in Virgo, it's very easy to kind of like analyze and intellectualize the components of like the wounding, you know, but because of Neptune being there, I think it's like made me really feel everything so much, which has been really obviously the gift of the healing. And then I feel like with the Saturn square starting, it's like I kind of am coming into like those last pieces of digesting that wounding. And then all of a sudden with the Saturn square, it was like all that kind of like came to a head, like started literally like on Friday when the Saturn square started. And but now I'm kind of like starting to write out my story. So there's like more action coming from it and more, you know, like, yeah, I don't know how else to describe it, except it's like Saturn's like right there with my North Node. And so it's like, I feel like a lot of what Saturn teaches for me is like third movement things rather than so much of the past in a way. Like I feel like it lights up like where I'm going. And so I feel like that's what it's doing. Like it's the next perfect piece coming out of the Chiron return, right? If that makes sense. I don't know.
It does, and it's a great way to look at it. It's a very positive way to look at it. And what does fall away is what's probably hindering you from stepping in more deeply to your life purpose. So you've had wounding there in the past. It might say that you would mature or reach, achieve those life purpose a little bit later than earlier in life, because you've had to overcome the, you know, the judgment and the guilt or whatever it kind of entrapped around that. So whatever it is, and then it definitely can help you, you know, step into whatever's new in a big way. Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's fascinating, too. I've just been, like, writing, which is totally a creative endeavor, which is, you know, my Leo rising, you know. So it's, yeah. So, you know, I had a mentor session with Daniel a couple weeks ago, you know, and we were just talking about all of this starting, and I was like, I just feel like the Saturn square is going to be all about that third movement. And he was like agreeing, you know, and I was thinking a lot about that component. And then all of a sudden it's like, I just, you know, started writing out like my story, you know, as part of like the final pieces of the digestion, but that's ultimately like the medicine too, you know? So it's just interesting. And I completely laughed when you said about joining the board. You couldn't hear me because I was muted, but I was like laughing when you said that. And the last thing I just wanted to say too was that, you know, we talk about like how like the bodies change, right? Like the first Saturn square, you know, the your teeth are forming, and the second, the Saturn opposition is like when puberty starts. It's like generalizations, you know, but one thing no one has like said, and I think it's worth pointing out, that I think this second Saturn opposition leading to this second Saturn square, like the third phase square, last quarter square, I think that's the time of menopause. And again, it's very general and it's really different for everyone, but it's like that kind of like 45 to like 52, you know? So I just thought I'd throw that in there when we talk about like the phases of what happens with the body and the physicality components of Saturn, because I've been really noticing that, and I feel like that's been really accurate for me. And anyway, so I just thought I'd share that, because it's beyond puberty.
Yeah. The beginning and the end of that phase of life. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And
the freedom it gives you to step more deeply into another purpose that maybe you are here to do.
Totally, right? And perfect following on the heels of your Chiron return, you know, it's like, because that's, I think menopause is such a time to like actually process and step into your true power, right? Like there's certain authors that call it like holding the blood, the wisdom, you know, that kind of thing. So anyways, I just thought that was kind of an interesting thing I'd throw out there too. So
it's good. It's really good. You find a stronger self because you don't care what people think anymore and you're willing to say what you really feel, which is very cool. You're more authentic.
Yeah, right, which is Saturn's whole gift and Chiron's, and, you know, so. Cool. Monica, well,
thank you,
she's like amazing. Yeah, thank you. Thanks, you guys.
All right, that was fun. Now we have Kent.
Yeah, hang on just a moment here.
Okay, let's pull it in.
Let me hang on just a moment. I'm having a
that's okay.
I don't know why it's not. All right. Let me. I'm going to bring in. Let's talk about Kent's chart, and then we'll move forward here. So Mary, do you want to have some of your thoughts first about Kent's question?
The first thing I would just, I know he asked about a couple of rulerships, and I just want to inform him that in the shamanic astrology paradigm, we don't do the rulerships in terms of the houses and that. We talk about resonant planets with the archetypes, but we don't do rulerships. So that we won't answer anything to that because we wouldn't incorporate that. But Saturn in Scorpio in the 11th house, I would look at that as a Saturn in a water sign, especially in the 8th house water sign of Scorpio, as relating to really merging the hard boundaries and constrictions of Saturn with the resonant energy of Pluto or Scorpio, which we know is a really deep emotional realm with themes that include dying to what is and rebirth and new levels of consciousness. So this is kind of, again, where you're forced to come into close contact with your own feeling nature, which is what Sheridan was just talking about, perhaps through personal crisis even, and that would probably appear in the material world as being Saturn, but really maybe having more emotional roots to them or origins. Saturn here could maybe indicate difficulty in expressing feelings. It being in the 11th house, I'd say that the influence is transpersonal rather than personal, and would have, having maybe completed your personal integration, you're now free to join this larger task. I'm talking about your soul, not necessarily in this lifetime, but in the past your soul has completed your personal integration, and now you're free to join a larger task of integration that serves the collective consciousness. So in other words, I would see that as being sensitive to universal concerns rather than your own personal ones. So I think that would be my take on the meaning of Saturn in Scorpio in the 11th house. You can add.
Yeah, thank you, Ray. I mean, he's so what we're, for those of you that aren't aware, we're looking at Kent's natal chart, and he was born with Saturn in the 11th house in the sign of Scorpio, but it's the house position that creates, more of the personal expression of how Saturn shows up in their lives. Doesn't mean the sign doesn't have any input there, but it's that house position. And then we also look at, as a primary way of expressing Saturn, is whatever personal points on the person's chart is being aspected. When we say personal points, we are talking about the sun, the lunar nodes, Mercury, Mars, Venus, the angles to the chart, ascendant, descendant, and Jupiter. All of those are known as personal points or personal planets, collectively. And so when Kent was born, Saturn essentially impacted or aspected seven personal points on his chart, which is one of the more closer to maximum, if you will, of the amount of Saturn a person can have. And, you know, conjunct his north node, squaring his natal Mars in opposition to his natal Sun and Mercury, as well as squaring the natal planet Jupiter, which is in itself is conjunct natally with Pluto. So he has this what we call Grand Cross formation on his chart. And so Saturn plays a very pivotal role in communicating the expression of all of these components of how his natal position of Jupiter shows up, Mars, Sun, and Mercury, and the North Node, South Node in some part because it's related to the North Node as well. So all of that shows up. So it makes for a person that is definitely someone that is can't get away with just breezing by life, that they have to show up and be responsible and show up for themselves and be responsible in them in their life. And there's a lot of checks and balances there that allows him to really go deeply into learning who and what he is in this world. You know, a great exploration, of course. It's also defined by whatever sign expressions are there for, say, for example, the Sun and Mercury and Mars, and then as well as the Jupiter-Pluto complex he's got. And Pluto, of course, plays just as equally a big role as Saturn does in his chart because it's tied in aspect-wise. He was born, you know, in 1956, there was a Saturn-Pluto square that year. Collectively, as well as Jupiter's role in that space. So there are many people that were born that year that would have that aspect, but they would be born at different times. So Mars and the Sun and Mercury would be placed a bit differently for most of them. So this is one of the defining, if not the defining, signature on his chart. So if we're, you know, from a practice standpoint, if someone is looking at this, you know, this is one that you're a reader, an astrologer is going to want to highlight as a really major player in that person's life. So Saturn plays, a really powerful role in his life. And right now, transit-wise, Saturn is just finished up squaring his natal moon, and I think it might go later this year. It might go back to close, around the 22 degrees. So he's still kind of in that influence of Saturn, and I believe he finished up with the Pluto cycle. But in addition to this, so for example, like in Sheridan's case, as well as here now in Kent's case, then when we're looking at a transit, and if two planets are going to be hanging around each other a lot in a given year. And one is the more direct aspect, but then the other one, like in case of Pluto, is very, you know, is having right now a, you know, in the conjunction stage with Saturn, still in that, from a shamanic perspective, still in that space. Then you would want to interpret Pluto's influence in that process, because it's not that Saturn doesn't operate in a void beyond what Pluto influences there as well, and vice versa. So you'll want to bring in the Pluto influence too. So this is exploring that for Kent, having his natal position of Saturn sitting there in the 11th house, and then now being in the Saturn cycle. You know, this can emphasize a great deal around the real world and some hard decisions to make in his life. That affect his future in the long term. He's got Mars in Aquarius and Sun and Mercury in Gemini. These are signs that are not that happy with limits and boundaries, and they want to they want freedom, and they want to express themselves and not have to be bound up by any rules or regulations. And yet, natally in his life, you know, Saturn's kind of provides that check and balance that gives them the ability to participate and connect with rules and regulations in his own life, and creating the kinds of rules that make sense to him for his own journey in life. But it can feel like when we get a Saturn transit, or even being in the Saturn complex, it can feel this, you know, that you're always going against the wind, or it's an uphill battle. But really, what's happening is it's requiring you to do the hard work necessary to really understand who you are. And once you get into alignment with that, it doesn't mean it's all easy, but it means that you are in embracing the process of what Saturn, the guidance of Saturn in your life. So that's an interpretation there. And I'm going to bring in Kent. I'm going to unmute him, and he's on the line here. Hopefully, he's texted me and sent me an email that he's had trouble hearing us on the line. So I'm hoping that he can show up here. Kent,
yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. Yeah, I went to my cell phone, and it's been quite a lot better, so I have no explanation for why there was interference on the landline. But anyway.
Wow. I was concerned. I was hoping that it wouldn't affect the recording and all of that. So I'm glad that you were able to get in clear.
Yeah. So, but I really appreciate what you and Mary have said, because it, you know, I kind of tried looking at my chart. You know, for some reason, I've always had kind of a block on what does that Saturn mean. And I like the word resonance. I know what you mean. It's not rulerships per se. It's resonance. And there seems to be a lot of with the midheaven too, being in Scorpio, in the 11th house, it seems like it's a conspiracy. it does feel like I can't get away with anything. So
that makes you feel. But it also protects you, Ken, because you could, without any rules, you have so much freedom in your chart that, it kind of anchors you and grounds you back. It's kind of like, I have Aquarius on my IC, and my partner is Capricorn, and I always joke that I keep him wild and he keeps me safe. It's that same kind of energy working together. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't really thought in terms of that, because, you know, the setup here, the Pluto and the Saturn being part of tied in with the Mars and my Sun, it can feel pretty overwhelming sometimes. It can sort of, you know, it's certainly a case where I've had to learn to deal with fear a lot. And limitation, and not quite sure what the Saturn is closely trying Uranus in Cancer in the 7th house too. So that's kind of, I think it's kind of like I've had a pattern of getting myself in relationships of El Libra Moon, getting myself in relationships where it's a really tight squeeze and things are not working out well, and then it almost feels like Uranus breaks me out of jail. So
I love it. I love that.
So yeah. I'd rather do life in a less extreme way, and I think I'm mellowing as I get older. And so that thing you said, Eric, about do the hard work of understanding who I am. That I'm very, very compelled to do that. Because resistance is futile.
Yeah, so says the Borg.
Yes, exactly. I feel. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, I just wanted to correct or add on something I said earlier about the transit time. I just calculated the Saturn square moon, and that transit for you ended in December. So that was a 2019 experience, and Saturn does not. Saturn retrograde back to about 25 degrees Capricorn this year, so you're out of the experience. But then later this year, Saturn will square your natal Vesta.
Tell me more about that, Eric, because I know you really are investigating Vesta.
Yeah, so Saturn square Vesta, this is not certainly of the same magnitude of Saturn square the moon, but it does relate because you were born with the moon, Neptune, and Vesta all conjunct each other in Libra. And so Saturn will still activate that Neptunian complex that you've got there. And because it's Libra, it's for you, Vesta is the sacred. What is sacred relationship? What is the nature of conscious equal partnership? What is the nature of it being expressed in a sacred way? So Saturn is asking you to look at that in your current life and finding out where it's missing, where it may not be showing up, or maybe sort of buried in some fashion. Where can you find your own responsibility and maturity to make conscious equal partnership relationships sacred in your life? And that's what I believe that particular transit initiation is about.
And being that it's in the 10th house, does that impact anything?
Absolutely. I certainly the 10th house is related to, certainly has a resonance with Saturn and Capricorn, but also the midheaven, like the expression of one's calling in life, and, you know, loosely I would say work, but not so much career. So certainly Libra plays an important role in your vocation, your expression out in the world. So having a partner that you work with, which you do, can be beneficial to the sacred expression of how Libra shows up in your life in the long term.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of tying in relationship and you might say calling or expression in the world.
Right. Now, of course, your midheaven in Scorpio is 8 degrees away from Vesta, so that's just another confirmation of that it does play a role in there. And when you're following your passion and your turn-ons to what you want to, you know, do with your life out in the world.
Yeah. Thank you. That's really interesting.
And it's certainly with Neptune there, there's a spiritual, you know, an illusion of not knowing, not an illusion, but of like almost a not knowing of that, if you're heading in the right direction with relationship or not. There could be kind of like, well, what is it there? Is it not there? But it's definitely celestially oriented. That adds another layer to the pie.
Yeah, and I'm wondering too if there's a resonance with the 12th house north node.
So just as Sheridan's chart, Saturn plays an important role in your future direction in life. It plays a highly significant role since it's only 8.5 degrees away from Saturn. So anything that you do around future, you know, Saturn is essentially a really powerful ally for moving forward in your life.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Daniel always says that when you get Saturn to the north node, that it really forces you to really get to the point in your life that there's a responsibility in the world that you have to assume, and that you've got a duty that you have to learn and administer a domain. So it's really, you have to use mastery, but you can't be attached to it, and you have to have a duty and hold the space but not be attached to it, and you have to be a serious person, but you also have to not take yourself seriously, which is really a mouthful. It's just like Saturn with your Mars will generally say, you have to work really hard at obtaining your next level of your Aquarian masculine. It makes you work hard. And just the other thing, because you've got things opposing and squaring, that the rule is generally you're more aware of these aspects that are in opposition because it's kind of like a full moon. But if it's squaring it, you're more blindsided. You're not as aware of it. So maybe working harder to become more aware of how Saturn is influencing the personal points that are squared could be helpful.
Oh, that's really interesting too. Saturn square Mars, for instance. And I'm thinking too, there might be with the Saturn square Vesta transit, there might be since Neptune is literally 1 degree away, I'm wondering that if that resonance with the Neptune thing there will sort of activate North Node kind of thing too, since it's in the 12th house.
Mm.
You know, the Pisces, kind of the Pisces signature, you might say that Piscean 12th house kind of thing resonating with the Neptune getting activated by Saturn too, since Saturn is next to the North Node.
Well, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I would say that there's something to that. It's not a, you know, it could be like the way a certain current inside you with your own spiritual track, your connection to celestial realm, or even empathy and feeling with heart can certainly play a role in how the 12th house job and the your Capricorn rising tribe will express itself during this particular transit, because Saturn is you know, resonant with the sign of Capricorn. So this is, there's a certain level of, you know, for you, you know, that's being activated, a certain level that's being triggered. So, you know, maybe there'll be a way to help you integrate that together between the way the 12th house job is and how Neptune shows up in your life.
Yeah, I think that's already happening, probably as a result of the Saturn and Pluto transits that I was going through. Because it kind of like those rolled back the layers of where I was really diluted in relationship, and then what's coming in now, which is feels very Saturn-like, kind of working with Neptune. I'm getting tools that are coming in to literally, in a very practical way, work with communication and relationships. For instance, nonviolent communication. That's been around forever, yeah. But I wasn't attracted to it till now, and now I'm taking practice classes in it. So
great.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, I want to, open up the call. So if one or two others have a question, that we'll have some time here. So thank you, Kent, for being on the call and for sharing.
Yeah, thanks to both of you.
Yeah. Thank you.
So for everyone, if you want to ask a question of Mary and I, press *6 to get in the queue. And, you know, we can stay on for a few more minutes here and help, you know, do our best to answer your questions. So, Mary, this has been a really good experience of being able to help people. We do have somebody here. All right. Okay. Is it Karen?
I don't know. Hello? Hi.
Hi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're on. Yeah, this is with Mary and I here.
Right. This is Michael Wilson.
Oh, okay. So it lists a different name there. I don't know why it does that, but okay.
I don't either. I'll have to figure that out. Anyway, I had a kind of pretty global question. It was triggered by you're talking about nuclear mistakes early on in talking about what Saturn's about. And I was, my question was, what is the basis for the assumption that what appears to be happening should not be happening? I think it's a kind of a question about, it's actually questioning the idea or concept that we have free will. And so I think, well, okay, what if free will is an illusion and God's will is the only will there is? And that could be translated as Saturn's wisdom. Saturn mm-hmm. could be showing us that this golden mean that we're supposed to develop through Saturn's tutelage. It's on an individual basis. What that is for us personally.
Okay, go ahead.
We don't have to believe that we know what the outcome should be, either for on the macro level or on the micro level.
Right. I would say, Michael, that shamanic astrology does not predict, and we actually don't make it a practice to judge something as being right or wrong. We are a very holistic school, and I just like when we were talking about the planetary Saturnella, we aren't feeling that things aren't supposed to be happening the way they are. We're actually kind of seeing how the macrocosm is kind of mimicking the microcosm of what the Romans did at the end of a cycle. So we're actually, I think, giving a lot of hope. And we do, I think as a paradigm, we believe that the relationship between the heaven and earth, we are the connection, and we do have the power to co-create. And it's been my personal experience that does work. So in terms of free will, I mean, we do have fate. If we probably don't take responsibility for the word is destiny. We have destiny, and what we forfeit to is fate if, in fact, we're not paying attention and doing our inner work. Uh-huh. But it's very much about inner work and observing the heaven and the earth and connecting in great ways. It's really based on the Emerald Tablets work that says as above, so below, as within, so without. And we do, I could say, we would agree that the whole universe is within each one of us. Yeah.
Great. Then I would say that the development of faith and ultimately of knowledge is our real goal. And that the closer we get to that goal, the less it matters what we do in Middle Earth and more what we do in mind or spirit.
Yes. I think all three. I think you need all three. I think doing your inner work and clearing the wounds and the karma is essential to be a pure vessel, to be that hollow reed that can hold more of the divine. And embody it here on Earth, and that is where I would see the strength from coming from. But that's maybe more my own personal philosophy. But yeah, and that's faith, if that's what you're also terming as faith. Actually, I do believe in the development of our intelligence, but I also know that we've been too left-brained, and this period of time is very much this Pluto working with Saturn right now on the big scale stuff is really right. about teaching us to that our highest intelligence comes from our heart, not our brain. That it's in feeling that we can develop an operating manual for spaceship Earth that can be successful. Right. And that it's in working together that we can be successful and sustain this planet and reroute some of the damages that have been done. But, I mean, also using the intellect, of course. I've got an Aquarian IC, but I've been guilty, very guilty of being stuck in my head. So, yeah.
So by knowledge, I mean heart knowledge.
Wisdom.
Having it.
Yeah.
Having it in your bones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having it really rooted within you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That experience of unity that we share with everyone and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you. Thank you so much for calling and bringing that up.
You're welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to share also that we're also here, as Mary touched upon as well, you know, that it's not just a matter of evolving beyond the body into energy, but also the involvement of spirit into matter and being, experiencing what it means to be human, all of the light and all of the shadow and everything in between. And that, you know, is inclusive of you know, a territory that can be looked at as, you know, as very, you know, violent or hostile, which, you know, or breakthroughs that you know that we make and discover that end up you know challenging every assumption we've ever made. Maybe there are a lot of different examples you can make from that, but that's something that the school also talks about, involution and evolution.
Well, I have four retrogrades in my chart and mostly outer planets, and I think that there's a path of return, then you don't have to be like that the whole of everything is not evolving at the same rate, and that some people will return before everybody does.
Well, I think that all of our charts are a soul's map that gives a lot of good direction to us on how, what our path of return is, what our dharma is, what our obstacles are, what our wounds are. And I think and that's what I love about shamanic astrology, is because it's given me that insight and it's allowed me to know myself more deeply and where I really need to do my inner work with it.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that was on the table.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
All right.
We'll be seeing you at the in Arizona, right?
Yes, that's for sure.
Oh,
all right.
Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we are going to be complete here, and you know, until the next time. I think it'll be after the March event is what we're holding, March 22nd through the 27th in Oracle, Arizona, and then sometime after that, maybe April, we'll resume another special call. Mary, what do you think?
I think so. We'll have to be coming up with our topic. If our listeners have a particular topic, drop a line to Eric or to myself at maryjkern@gmail.com. This has been fun. We love bringing this stuff to you, and we hope that we can continue to enrich and help you build your foundation with shamanic astrology.
Thank you all. All right. Goodbye, everyone. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.